I'll tell you what, the two young guards, Redmond had a, or I should say, Westerman had a good first quarter. Redmond's moving bodies around in the second quarter. Why the hell weren't these guys playing earlier this season? They're moving people out there between the tackles.
This is the Locked On Bengals podcast on a Tuesday. Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for tuning in. Joe Goodberry coming up in 60 seconds. You heard Dave Lapham there. We're going to dive into that because, well, Dave's right. And we've seen this with Marvin Lewis teams, and it's ridiculous. We'll dive into that in just a second with Joe Goodberry. On Twitter, at James Erpine, at Locked On Bengals. Subscribe, iTunes, the iHeartRadio app, Megaphone, and wherever you listen to podcasts. This, if you're new to Locked On Bengals, it's simple. My goal, every single day, give you an in-depth look at the Bengals. And as always, we're joined by Joe Goodberry. He's on Twitter, at Joe Goodberry. Joe, why in the hell would it take so long to play Westerman, to play Alex Redmond? This team, this coaching staff, they do this every single year, whether it was with Rex Burkhead last year, this year with the offensive line. It's like they stumbled into Giovanni Bernard out of nowhere. I don't trust this coaching staff to play the best guys, Joe.
Yeah, and it's funny because we, I feel like if you're on this side of the fence of, you know, the argument that the Bengals don't evaluate their guys correctly, or if they do, they have too much loyalty to their veterans. And I think those are great arguments because we've seen it. It's been a long time. It's been 15 years with the same head coach. This isn't just, you know, what you perceive as what's going on. Even if you don't have inside information or reports to back it up, it just there's enough evidence out there to say they lean on their veterans for far too long, past their use, and they don't give the backups who could potentially be better players a fair shake, a fair opportunity to prove it. And you know, I've kind of gotten in arguments on Twitter a little bit of for people to say, well, it's, you know, it's just this year they took Bullock over Elliott and then decided he was better, or it's just this year that now you can see that finally Westerman had a chance to play. But it's not, like you said, it's Rex last year, Rex Burkhead. It was Evan Mathis and Nate Livings. It's just there's a lot of times where a backup could have been playing. It could be William Jackson finally. You know, he's played almost 60% of the snaps now because Pac-Man's been out. But to go into the year, you didn't feel like he had a secure 100% starting job. Last year, they didn't give him the opportunity because they said, we'll take Cedric Bierman off of IR. It's happened with Darquez Dennard where they've leaned on other guys. And it's just, it's inconsistent because there are rookies that play. There are young guys that play. But when you get into the end of the year, and you hear this from reporters too, they're like, you might see that guy when they're out of it. And the Bengals wait until they're mathematically out of it. You could tell why. Go back to week six, week five. It didn't feel like this team was ever going to make a run in the playoffs. Even if they found a chance, found a way to go 8-8, 9-7, and squeaked in, they weren't going to make noise. They were out of it as soon as the season started. And it took them until 2 weeks left in the season to really, until you felt like, okay, they're going to play some of these young guys. They're going to actually shake things up. And it took injuries. So let's not give them too much credit because they lost both their tackles. They were forced to do this, forced to finally play Christian Westerman and Alex Redmond. And I thought both guys played really, really well. And it sucks to be in the final games and find out you have assets on the team that could have helped you all year or maybe even for a year and a half now.
Yeah, it's awful. And it happens every year. So they win, and I think back and look at the game, and they're 6-9 now, and it's a good win over a team that needed to get a victory in the Detroit Lions. And I wonder what Dave Lapham is. Why the hell did it take this long? And I think it's an indictment of Paul Alexander, the offensive line coach, the stubbornness of Marvin Lewis. And that is why I'm, like, so on board, and I can't wait to see who else comes in, because there's in rightfully so, because he hasn't played. The John Ross thing. How do we know if he wasn't good? Why should I trust Marvin made the right call there when he doesn't make the right call time and time again with some of these players? We've seen it time and time again. Why does he get the benefit of the doubt? I don't think he deserves it.
And it's not just guys not playing and or sitting the bench or being inactive. Even when they're playing, you don't always feel like they understand how to use these guys to their fullest potential. So, you know, it's a lot. I'm watching Brandon LaFell get 3 screen passes last week. I think he caught 4 passes for 8 yards. That's 2 yards per catch. I don't even know how you begin to get that without some crazy play happening. And it wasn't. They just kept feeding him screen passes, and he's not built for that. It took him how long to figure out what Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard did well, that they weren't Jeremy Hill, that you don't need to run those plays. They still run these stretch zones, even though they know they don't have a center that can reach the nose tackle. They know they don't have the athleticism at guard to get to the next level and block these linebackers. It took them far too long to figure out what they can and can't do in the run game, on the offensive line, what they still don't know what receivers they have out on the field, and that was a topic of conversation all year. And I think still even on the defense, here we are, Andrew Billings. Pat Sims was the nose tackle coming into the year. It took an injury for him to go down. Billings played really well for the heart of the season. I thought last couple weeks, I don't know what's going on. I know he had an injury in the Vikings game and came back in, but he was pretty bad those last 2 weeks, so they benched him this week. And here we are, we're talking about being in the evaluation portion of the year, and we need to see these young guys play. And they bench him. So I understand because he's been playing poor, but those are the guys I want to see play. I want to see all the young guys out there right now as much as possible. We've seen Jordan Evans, and he's made some plays. He's gotten beat up at the same time, too. He's been hurt. More of these guys at safety, whether it's Josh Shaw and Clayton Fajelum at safety, the corners are playing really well right now. I kind of stepped back from this game after they won, and it felt good to win, even though I like having the higher draft pick. But I stepped away and I said, there is more talent on this team than the coaching staff has shown us, and I truly believe that.
This is the Locked On Bengals podcast. I'm James Erpine. He's Joe Goodberry. He joins us every single week for our weekly Bengals film review. And Joe, that's the interesting thing, is why did it take so long? Marvin Lewis's final season, he probably knew it week 7, week 8. Why not give these guys a shot? They couldn't run the ball at all, and they're still awful on offense statistically. And basically what we've seen, if they would have done this week 7 or week 8, we might be having a different conversation right now.
Yeah, and that's the crazy part, is because they, you know, when you look back, you had to look at last year. And I think most people would agree the offense was the reason this team didn't go any further last year. And it was going into this year, you knew they needed speed at receiver. You knew they needed a new running back to lean on. It would have been great to get some offensive line pieces. They didn't do that. Obviously we lost two best offensive linemen on the team. But, the whole offseason should have been planning on getting Ross and Mixon involved and finding a way to hide the offensive line, finding a way to get the ball out of Andy's hands quicker. And for whatever reason, and maybe the blame goes on a lot of Ken Zampezi, because they come out of that year this year and they aren't ready for this. They don't realize their offensive line has gotten worse. They don't realize that their weapons are the exact same. They're not leaning on Joe Mixon at running back. It took way too long. It took, Mixon was probably getting the load at, week 6, week 7. Mm-hmm. We didn't really see Giovanni Bernard heavily until Hill was completely out of the picture, and it seemed like they had to make a concerted effort to get Giovanni Bernard the ball again. And, just seeing this game yesterday or 2 days ago now, it reminds you how good Giovanni Bernard is and how much he can help this team. The whole season, I keep coming back to the same thing, that they did not realize what players they had for some odd reason. It's the weirdest thing. Thinking, if Marvin Lewis, if this is your final year, if this is your chance to, if you wanted to continue coaching, you have to pull out everything. You had to try something. They were so confident that whatever they're doing, if they just stayed the course, it would figure itself out. That's usually what teams do when they have a lot of talent and they believe it'll just click for them. But they were missing talent in key positions, and they were misusing their key talent at other positions. So it never got turned around. And here we are now. Bengals are picking 10th as of now with one game to go. With a new coaching staff, new era about to start, hopefully we get – this is the part that you really – going forward, you want these players to play above. You want the coaching staff to make them better. You want the guys to elevate other people around them. You feel like you see the worst version of everybody. Even, and it includes A.J. Green, and he's coming off two poor games. But you want to see these guys play above and beyond what you're normally used to seeing from them.
This is the Locked On Bengals podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes, the iHeartRadio app, Megaphone, and pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts. Joe Goodberry is our guest. Joe, let's move on here and discuss a few other things. One thing that I think was interesting, Andrew Billings, a healthy scratch. What has he been? What has he shown on film? What have you seen from him? And why would you think that he would be a healthy scratch last week?
That was the surprise out of all the inactives listed right before the game. And at the same time, I reflected really quick and said, you know, the last 2 weeks of him, he's been pretty poor. He's been getting washed out, blowing off the ball. And that comes with tape. You know, when he's actually been playing for the last 6 to 8 weeks and playing heavy snaps, I think you start to look at the tape at the other team and say, what can we do to him? What can we do to move this guy out of the way or move him off the ball? And for whatever reason, whatever it was, I couldn't pinpoint it because it looked kind of like his knee was bothering him to me because he couldn't anchor and he wasn't going down to one leg and really securing his spot on the field and holding on to two blockers the way he should. A lot of it comes together, though, because you can look bad as defensive tackle when you got bad linebackers behind you. In the last couple of weeks, he has. Those guys, you know, if you're going to hold that nose, if you're going to hold the center or guard and allow that linebacker to scrape over the top and freely and get to the running back, the whole defense looks better, and you can kind of look over a hand usage loss or leverage loss for the nose tackle. And in the last couple of weeks, he wasn't able to do that because the linebackers really didn't know where they're supposed to be, and they're slow to the ball. So his losses looked much worse than normal. And when he was good, I thought he was really good. There was a few stretches, I think back to like the Titans game, where he was bench pressing guys regularly, and he was flashing on the defensive line as much as any of the starters. And it gave hope that maybe they have their nose tackle of the future. And as we have one eye on the draft and the offseason, a lot of people have said, you know, what are their bigger needs on defense? And a lot of people want a linebacker, which I would agree with, but I think defensive tackle is still an issue. And not only is Geno Atkins getting older with 1 year left on his deal, but you don't know if you have a high-end player or just a solid contributor in Ryan Glasgow after his rookie year, which I think was a fine rookie year. And you don't know what you have in Andrew Billings yet. If he's your starter, he needs to still get better than what he is. Yes, he flashed. Yes, he did make some splash plays. But a nose tackle, and it's something the coaches really talked about with Domo Tapeko, you have to be sound. You have to be in your gap. You have to be disciplined. You have to keep your eyes up and keep your vision. Keep your length so that you don't get swallowed up. Billings is inconsistent in all those ways. And you want the splash plays because obviously they help your defense, but it's the routine stuff that helps out more often. And that's where Billings really needs to progress. So as of right now, I still think they need an athletic pre-tech to back up Geno Atkins. You know, if you get a guy even in the first round, I'd consider it. There's a couple guys when we get in draft talk, I know there's a couple guys there that'll be in the top 12 conversation. And you could see them going in that route because right now they're still using a third defensive end in nickel inside. And I think if you drafted a pass rusher, that's where he would fit in and then eventually replace Atkins in a couple years. But you also still probably need a nose tackle. And I'm not sure if that means in the first round, because that's not where those guys usually go. But if you were in the third, fourth, fifth round and you see a value, I think you can do that. But it takes those guys a few years. So, you know, I think we're still scratching the surface with Billings and Glasgow.
He's Joe Goodberry. Joe, this offense, 32nd in the league in total offense. And I know the offensive line, but I've seen some stuff on Twitter, and especially the ball that hit A.J. Green in the face mask. Now there's a narrative of A.J. Green isn't playing as well. I know you study wide receivers across the league for Bleacher Report. When you look at receiver play across the league and you've seen every snap of A.J. Green's 2017 season, how does that compare to A.J. Green's past 6 years in the league?
I would say this is easily his most, I don't want to say it's his worst year. It's his most down year. And he hasn't experienced too many complete losses like this. When he went out last year, they were still relatively, you know, close to 500 before he missed that last 5 weeks or so. You know, and it really started to tailspin from there. So we didn't get to see him down the stretch where the games really didn't matter. Now we're seeing that. And I think it definitely has affected him. He's had concentration drops. He's had routes where there was one, I don't know. I can't remember if this was, it wasn't intercepted last week. It was almost intercepted, but it's basically a scissor route with two-man route off of play action. You have LaFell coming across, and you got Green coming on a deep crosser, and they almost run into each other. And now I think I've seen that about once every single week where it's either Green and LaFell, or it could be Green and a tight end. They almost run right directly into each other, and Green had to slow down. The ball, Andy was about to get hit, so he kind of ducked and threw it and didn't see this. And the ball sails nowhere. And just little things like that. And as I'm watching today, I'm watching the Broncos receivers, and it's the same play. And these guys just have a more awareness, more in they're out of it too, just as much as the Bengals are. And Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders just crisscross each other like they've done it a million times. And it knocks off a defender, and one guy ends up free. And the Bengals just don't have that energy right now. They're just out of it, just a step off. And especially AJ Green, I don't know why, for a guy who tracks the ball as well as anybody, especially the deep ball, and a guy who's able to separate in that last 2 or 3 yards as the ball's arriving, whether that's with he got called on a push-up offensive pass interference, which that's a play he does all the time. That's a move he uses all the time. Yeah. And the one that hits him in the face mask, he's just breaking free, and as he does, he pushes himself forward. This is normally what he does. And because of it, he ended up too far, and the ball hits him in the face mask. It's a guy that never misjudges a deep ball. He knows where it's going to land, and he gets there. That's what makes him special. And for that ball to hit him in the face, you go, something's just a little bit off with him. Darius Slay is a great corner. He really is. I think he's a top 10 guy. And Green could have had a monster game against him. And I wish he would have, because, I'm tired of this year, especially. You have to answer questions, fans, a lot. When in a down year, everyone looks like they've had a bad year on paper, on offense. Who would you really point to and say, yeah, they're playing better than I expected? And I don't think I would point to anyone on offense. And maybe Tyler Croft, but even the last few weeks, what happened to Croft? He's dropping passes. He looks like he's frustrated with himself, even in blocking too. So I just think it's contagious, and you would hope your best player in AJ Green is above that. But I think it's apparent that he's not.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do think, though, that looking at AJ, and there have been plenty of plays, especially before I'd say the last three games where they got blown out, and then Sunday's went over Detroit, where, and you know this, Andy's missed AJ a ton. Like, he's just got over 1,000 yards, and that number, not defending AJ or going at Andy at all, but if he hits AJ, keeps a couple of those in bounds, he's still probably looking at a 1,300, 1,400 yard season.
Oh, definitely. It just, look at the last week. There was one deep ball that gets picked off, and I think it was offsides. But that ball is inside and to the back of the end zone. Didn't really, and on the arc of it, really doesn't give Green a chance to come back and get inside and moss Darius Slay, if you will. And then there was another deep ball, and even the announcers said it was short. But he's got the safety to the inside. He's beat him. He's beat Slay down the left sideline, and that ball lands too short. That was a potential touchdown. There's been a lot of deep passes to Green that aren't there. And, there's a lot of plays where you can't go to Green because of the other receivers. It's all year. It's been 2 years in a row now. He should be getting frustrated at this point with how much defensive attention he receives and how the offense will go away from him if the defense shows that they're going to lean his way. It, like we talk about all the time, the Bengals offense is very, very, very focused on that pre-snap read. And if a defense shows they're going to lean a safety that way, if they show they're going to back out that linebacker to the side, that he'll cover the short area, the corner will cover to the boundary, and in the intermediate, and the safety will have the inside and deep. If they show that pre-snap, the Bengals don't force the ball to Green. They really aren't a lot this year. They've remember the first 4 or 5 years, they would just have YOLO balls to AJ Green. We'd say it all the time.
Yep.
They didn't care. They'd throw it up to him, and he would go make a crazy catch, and we'd all go crazy, and the entire offense would get a spark from it and get excited from it. You don't see that too often. I'm thinking back to the Texans week 2, where he had to jump over 3 guys on a crossing route to make a crazy catch. And that's about it, really, this year. And it kind of makes the perception of Green that he's worse because he hasn't made you'd always get 5 crazy catches for the 1 drop or fumble that he would have, and you were okay with it. Now that we're not getting the crazy catches because they're not giving him crazy situations, those drops and those fumbles stand out, and it looks like as if he's having a down year. I think his opportunities are down. I think his help is down from the guys around him. I think some of the plays he catches look so routine, we've gotten so used to it. Whether it's a ball that he's got to lean back for or adjust at the last second and get his feet in, I'm watching other receivers, and it's not normal. It's not routine for everyone else. It's routine for AJ Green. I think we've gotten very used to it.
He's Joe Goodberry. It's our weekly Bengals film review. Last question for you, Joe. Why, and I repeat, why can't the Bengals find a way, because I know you agree with this, to get Giovanni Bernard and Joe Mixon in the backfield at the same time?
I'm looking around the league because people have said that.
Or on the field at the same time.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't even have to be in the backfield together. That's the 2 questions then, really, because in having them in the backfield together doesn't happen too often around the league. As you watch, It's not something a lot of teams do for whatever reason, because you got to think you're taking out either a tight end or a third receiver if you're going to do that. And I think if you're going to throw the ball out of that, you want to have that extra receiver. If you're going to run out of it, you want to have the tight end the block. So it becomes, in most opportunities, you're not putting your best players out there. For the Bengals, it's probably in their best interest to have two Giovanni Bernard, Joe Mixon out there, because they're two of your better players, if not two of your three best weapons on offense right now. So that question comes up a little bit more for Bengals fans. And I get it. And especially if you watched Joe Mixon at Oklahoma last year, and then the previous year to that too, him and Samaje Perine were in the backfield a ton together. Well, Perine's more of a bowling ball type, and you can have him go and block and have Mixon cut off of him, and that works in college and in a wide open conference the way they do it. But on the field together, that's the one mystery about Mixon this year too, is they have not split him out wide and run routes with him. I remember a screen in the preseason game, and since then I haven't seen him run really a route that wasn't just a decoy route or just going out there to draw a linebacker away. I haven't seen him run a route like he did in college yet this year. It's crazy to me that he's got 29 catches, I want to say. Leonard Fournette has more. There's a bunch of guys that have more receptions than Joe Mixon. It's a part of this offense that should have been featured from the go. And to think that, you know, they didn't use Geo enough at all and they didn't use Mixon correctly all year, that's one of the biggest mysteries on offense altogether. And, you know, it's right up there with how don't you find a way to use John Ross. Mixon was just as dynamic as a receiver as Christian McCaffrey. And you see McCaffrey get 7 catches a game. If you're playing fantasy, you're living off those receptions for McCaffrey if he's on your team. It's not the same for Mixon right now. And whatever coordinator comes in here next year, whatever head coach comes in here next year, it reminds me a lot of how Jeff Fisher limited Todd Gurley's production. And you see Gurley now, and he'll have 120 yards receiving, breaking off 80-yard receptions on a screen. That's Joe Mixon, and it's coming. And I just think that, you know, if they get the right guy and if they hire the right guy in offense, there's so much untapped potential, I think, with Mixon still, to the point where in 2 or 3 years he could be the best offensive player they have on the team, and the offense will probably flow through him. And, you know, I still think he's Le'Veon Bell in the making. And I know that comparison has been thrown around a lot, and also giving him some, you know, maybe negative press with Le'Veon Bell, but I think it's real, and I think that's where this offense is heading. So I think we should keep that in mind when we're looking at potential candidates.
I completely agree. I said that on, I believe it was Thursday or Friday's podcast. It was pretty simple. That's the blueprint. You know, if you get you get the offense right, this defense clearly has enough talent and potential. And before I let you go, I do have to ask you, William Jackson III, star showing up on film as good as he does on game day, at least from what I've seen?
Even better on film. I think that's why offenses aren't throwing at him. They watch the film, and they're looking at it and going, I'm not throwing towards that guy. Even when you're open, he somehow finds a way to get a hand in there and break it up. There was 2 balls that should have been caught against them on Sunday. He found a way to make both of them contested, make both of them way harder than they should have been, get a hand, bump an elbow, whatever he's got to do to the receiver to get him to drop the ball, and they did. He was targeted 3 times. All 3 were contested. I think he had 2 breakups. I think on the stat sheet, he ended up with one. But, yeah, he's on guys. And he does lose sometimes, especially in transition, because he's a long-leggy guy with, you know, not the agility you'd really want out of a number one corner, but what he does to make up for it is his ball skills and his length and his awareness. And he is so calm when the ball's in the air. He'll lose on that initial break, but he recovers and reacts so quickly that if you're going to test that ball, you're going to throw it to him, you better be throwing with a number one receiver that he's covering, because he may have better ball skills. He may have better reaction time than an average receiver going against him. And I think you saw that a bunch. There were times when they wanted Marvin Jones to be featured for the Lions, they went over and put him on Kirkpatrick's side. When they wanted Golden Tate, they put him in the slot. And even Darquez Denhart didn't give up much to Tate either. So I think that's why the Lions struggled as much as they did, is they knew they couldn't get the ball to the left side against William Jackson. They couldn't get it into the slot against Denhart. It was their best chance was to throw it against Kirkpatrick. And they got one deep call and a couple other that looked like they could have had more opportunities on film. But that was basically their – that's how this defense was going to be built now. It's going to be built off William Jackson and this pass rush. In 2 years, it might be Carl Lawson and William Jackson and whoever else is out there, because those are – that's how you're going to build. You're going to build and say, we can cover guys man-to-man, and we can cover for more than 2.5 seconds now. And because of it, you know, that changes your defense a lot. And they haven't had that. They've had good corners. They haven't had a true shutdown number one type. And I go back and I'm looking at Jackson in college. Jackson can play both sides. And that's enticing for me, because the Bengals traditionally like a left corner and right corner, because guys look better at one spot or the other. Kirkpatrick, that's the spot he played at Alabama that he's playing now. He really hasn't moved all around. Jackson has, and Jackson can. And it's interesting to me if the next guy comes in and says, okay, we can build off him being our right corner where he's a lockdown, shutdown guy, or we can have him shadow and start following number one receivers. And if he does that and he can continue his play at that level, that makes your defense scary.
He's Joe Goodberry. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Joe Goodberry. Joe, I appreciate the time as always. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, James.
That's Joe Goodberry. I'm James Erpine. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's Locked On Bengals podcast. A ton to get to this week. You'll hear from Paul Daner Jr. of The Enquirer on tomorrow's podcast, along with a bunch of other things between now and the end of the week. I'll be at Paul Brown Stadium. And then after Sunday, it's all systems go. Offseason, NFL draft, head coaches. We'll dive into it, because the offseason, well, it's going to be a blast here at Locked On Bengals, so make sure you tune in, subscribe, iTunes, the iHeartRadio app, Megaphone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, check out LockedOnBengals.com. Until tomorrow, I'm James Erpine. Thank you so much for listening to the Locked On Bengals podcast.